world. As soon as there is that feel of I and world, because this is an idea that is based on that unreal something, that which is not real. So what happens is, this is a very interesting psychology that develops here, that one feels therefore an attraction for the world. I want to get connected with the world. What is this? It actually signifies the underlying oneness. I feel as I separate from the world a sense of lacuna, a sense of imperfection, and the feeling comes that if I get something from the world, that will perfect me, that will make me perfect, that will bring completion to my awareness. Like say I am a man, if I get a wife, that will make me complete. Or any other thing, you know, I do not have enough money, so if I get enough money, that will bring perfection to me. So what happens there, it is actually, if you analyze, this is a distorted drag for oneness. That this separation is not liked by us. And therefore somehow we want to get connected and become one. Even therefore in all our learning, you will see that there is this underlying current of seeking oneness. What do we seek when we are, say, for example, studying various different disciplines in schools? We discover laws. What is a law? Means the various different incidents, they are explained by something one. They are woven into one, like law of gravitation, that you see the apple falls, what Newton's are, and then many things, you throw a ball up, it falls, and so many other incidents that you see, something that affects a tiny particle as well as the big, huge stars. So all of these are woven into one principle, then that is called knowledge. And the knowledge is where you get a principle that ties, that is, that weaves in all these different things together, and thus you see the oneness in all of them, and you feel satisfied. We have known. If things are happening differently, you do not understand, you feel confused, dissatisfied. That why, where from all these different species they come? Is there a connection? How do they come? How is the variety generated? Then somebody like Darwin observes them and finds a principle underlying all the difference in the species. You then come with the principle of evolution. And thus you feel that you know, because now a oneness has been established. In all our search for happiness, it is really we are looking for oneness. And also that is why we try to find out, agreements in the world. Let us find out those of us who agree about something. What is this? That is again a search for oneness. That you want everything to be established on some one platform, one unit. It is therefore a basic search. And whatever goes against this, whatever is therefore based on the division, is the origin of sin. It may not always appear as sin, but the seed of sin is there, that division, I and the world. I am doing such a good work. And people won't call it sin. It is not sin. It's a good action. But that also is, if it is based on that division, I am doing good action. always there will be an expectation. They should call me good. They should not call me bad. They should give me due credit. There should be some appreciation of the good work that I am doing. So what happens? It generates that hankering further. Therefore, it is basically a sinful action. But where then the sin starts dissipating or going away? When we realize that this mistake, and therefore instead of getting identified with it, instead of getting propelled by this mistake, we try to rectify this fundamental mistake. And that is why it is called punya karma. Those who have understood that this is all the sinful actions, whether world calls it sinful or world praises them as virtuous, doesn't matter. They are based on this division, and therefore they will lead to dissatisfaction in life, and this dissatisfaction increases craving, and out of this craving then person wants to get more and more, and thus person becomes cruel, sinful. Then that comes to the fore. Then people recognize it as sin. That's all. But that seed is there. I want more. I want more. And this never gets satiated. In the third chapter, we have seen this discussion between Arjuna and Krishna. Actually, Arjuna asked a very pointed question. That is in the mind of all of us, that what makes us commit wrong action in spite of ourselves? We don't want to commit bad actions. We do not want to hurt others. We do not want to do something that is against the truth. Yet something, as it were, from inside propels me to do it. And Arjuna is asking the question, who is that who is propelling me to do that? And there Krishna gives the beautiful reply, which is a very sublime and yet psychologically a very penetrating. That what is it? Kama esha krodha esha. This desire in you and the anger, which is the reverse side of desire. And we consider, many of us consider anger, of course, to be an enemy. That anger disturbs us, anger is very difficult to get, then we cannot deal with people properly. Anger is bad, we know. But desire, do we consider them bad? Many will say, no, desire is good. Because desire brings pleasure in my life. And desire is, if there is no desire, the life will become just dry and drab life. Sam feels that, well, because I have the desire to eat an apple, then I go and get the apple, eat the apple, then I feel happy. If I have no desire to eat the apple, basically, then I will not go to eat the apple, and thus will miss the pleasure that the apple will give. So, without desire, what is there in life? What a terrible misunderstanding we get. Just look at this, that before this desire to eat apple came in mind, he was fine. Sam was fine till then. The desire created a tension, a restlessness to get an apple. And after he got the apple, what happened? He came back to the same state that he was before getting the desire. No additional happiness was provided by the apple. Desire only created a craving. That's all, a suffering, a tension that was created by desire. And this desire in the world, it never gets fulfilled. You may say that this is a very sweeping statement, adventurous statement, that no desire ever gets fulfilled. Like suppose I want to become the President of United States. Not very easy, Vishwanath may say, but I am quite popular. And so if I strive, I will be able to become President of United States. So why is this desire not going to be fulfilled? It can be fulfilled basically, maybe difficult, but so one in millions can become president. Okay, but I could be that one in amongst the millions. Why this desire cannot be fulfilled? So many presidents were there, so many could fulfill that desire. So basically, I too have a chance to fulfill it. So why do you say that the desires could not be fulfilled? See, to become president of United States was not the desire at all. It was expressing like that. Had that been the desire, after one becomes president, one should have been satisfied, is it not? But that is not the case. The desire then becomes further flared up. It targets something else. That was just an appearance, one hole, through which that was expressing itself. Therefore, in elaborating the answer, Lord Krishna tells, how are these desires? When you see the root that the desire goes on, it is Mahashano Mahapapma. It says there that it has a tremendous hunger, unsatiable hunger. You keep on pouring into it and it doesn't get removed, rather flares up further. In another scripture, in Mahabharata, there is another incident where this has been given the analogy, explained by the analogy that if you pour fuel to fire, that doesn't put out the fire. Do you put fuel to fire to put it down? No, it is if you put fuel to fire, it flares up further. Similarly, by putting the objects of so-called enjoyment in desires, what will happen? The desire will flare up further. And then when you see it is not getting satiated, you feel this is what is obstructing it. That is what is obstructing me. And then anger comes there, like a ball, you know, when you throw it at the wall. What happens? It rebounds. So desire thrown at the objects, they get back to us, and that is what is called anger. So anger is impossible if there is no desire. And if there are desires, it is not possible to root out the anger completely. You may control it as expression, that you may be very angry with your boss, but you know that you cannot show it there. So you keep quiet there, and after coming back home, you start screaming at your wife. Because again some outlet has to be provided. So if you show anger to the boss, then the boss may fire you. Therefore you don't show anger there. You come back home and then it expresses itself. So therefore it is not possible basically to get rid of anger if there are desires. And thus person commits all types of sin through that. So, and then those who understand this, now they want to work it out in the sense that they want now to hold on to the truth. They change the direction. This changing of direction is really the virtuous life, punya karma, the meritorious life. How much work you do doesn't matter. But you are changing the direction of life, that instead of the life that is based on this error, I don't want that. I want the life based on truth. So instead of holding on to this I and world, they now hold on to God, who is the reality of all. So they therefore dvandva moha vinirmukta. They become freed from all delusions and the dualities. The dualities are, if they are just dualities, not much of a problem, but they are not just dualities. They are pulling us apart from two sides. You want to go to a place, the trouble is, if that is the only thing, then it could be done. But another vibration immediately comes that I should not go to that place. I should sit and meditate. No, I should not sit and meditate. All these constantly changing, this dual throng, that is the reason for our unhappiness, being pulled in two opposite directions. And this person now is free from that, knows that God is the reality, the truth, and therefore steadfastly worships or is attached to God. And that then, whatever is done out of that, now becomes the punya karma or the virtuous meritorious action. If that is not there, then whatever actions, apparently they may be good actions too, but still being from the source of this mistake or error, they are the sinful actions. Whereas the other actions, which may not be always very easily noticeable as good actions, yet they are based on this understanding of truth, and therefore they are termed as the good or meritorious actions. And so therefore they now hold on to God with great resolve, because they have understood that God is reality. It requires, friends, lot of resolve. Why is resolve required? Resolve is because there is the momentum that is still carrying you or pulling you in the opposite direction. Then you need a resolve to overcome that momentum. Like, yes, you may feel that, yes, I should do meditation, getting up early in the morning, and I should do meditation. Yes, but if there is no resolve there, then the opposite forces, they pull you. Oh, if I meditate in the morning, then I feel very tired. Today it is too cold, so let me postpone it for some more time. Or such things, because of non-resolve, the idea doesn't get carried into practice. The idea is there, but it needs to be dynamized. It needs to be held on with resolve. See, climbing up requires a lot of resolve. Not climbing does not require resolve, friends. Going down happens automatically. To take water to the hilltop, you require pump. But to let it go down, gravity does the job. You don't have to work for it. So, therefore he uses the word there, dridhavrataha. One has to have that resolve. Without resolve, practical spiritual life is impossible. It is, there will be many unpleasant things that people may criticize you. Okay, well, let them criticize me as if they don't criticize otherwise. Otherwise also, people will criticize you. No, why my wife tells me I shouldn't be doing all this. Well, then does it mean that you should not do it? You have been doing all those things. Did it help you? If you have to go on the path of truth, and you have to disentangle yourself from these considerations and hold on fast to the ideal. Will you stop going to your job if your wife says, no, you don't go? You will go. You know that you have to go. It is whatever we like, we do that. Whether people tell, whatever people say, we don't care about it. It is only when you want to do something spiritual, you remember, no, my wife doesn't like it. My wife doesn't like me to go to football game, but I don't care at that time, you know. I say, everything I did not do according to what my wife says. It is, so I go there for the football game, but when it is time for meditation, then I think, So, it is mind that is trying to find out some excuses, and therefore a resolve is very important, friends. Let us not be in the fool's paradise that it will happen automatically, and when I will get old, it will happen automatically. Nobody ever gets old in that sense then. Old age doesn't bring resolve. The young, energetic mind can have some resolve. Old age does not automatically bring resolve, friends. At the old age, the energy is already so dissipated that it is difficult to make a good resolve. So important is this, that one has to have that resolve. And what happens then? Once you hold on with that resolve, now the picture changes. Now the journey really progresses. Now you really start on the spiritual path. And what happens therefore? What you were otherwise also wanting, but were sure that it is not possible to accomplish, that starts happening in life. And the things which are now told in very common terms, God realization or spiritual illumination, are big words. And many people, the ordinary people, would say that we don't care about it. We are not saints. And we will lead our life whatever, and it is not really what we want, and very difficult for us. So, if you use these words, that spiritual illumination or the supreme consciousness, people will think that they are just philosophical words. But something that touches everybody, everybody, whether one expresses it or not, the two problems that we all have, they are mentioned in this verse, next verse, that is old age and death. 29th verse, Jara marana mokshaya mama shritte yatantiye te brahma tad vidu krishnam adhyatmam karma chakhilam. Those who strive for freedom from decay and death, taking refuge in me, know that Brahman, all about the embodied self and actions in its entirety. So these two, Jara Marana, we all want to get free from that. And we still know that it is inevitable that one will become old and one will die. But yet we have that feeling that old age should not come to me, death should not come to me. We at least try to cover up the old age. We cannot prevent its advent, but then if people know that I am old, then I may not be treated properly, I may not get the job. One tries to cover up those things. We don't really like to become old, but is there a choice about it? We have to become old. As soon as one is born, one starts becoming old. That is why it is asked to even to a child, how old are you? How old are you? It is nobody is asked, how young are you? Well, it is the old age that grows on us. After we are born, the old age starts there. We go on becoming older and older and older. There is no preventing this. And death is the next thing. Can we prevent it? No. And yet, who doesn't want it? Everybody wants to push the old age and death away. It is, friends, deep in our psyche that we may not express it in words while talking to others, but if we search in our psyche a bit deep, we want to push these two things away. No, I don't want to become old, and I don't want to be dead. I don't want to die. We want to push away these things. Is there a way to do it? Is there a way to do it? Yes, there is a way to do it. How? Which medicine should I take? Do you have some herbal preparation that will prolong indefinitely? Now they sell, all the whatever we want, people know the weakness. Especially those in the business, they immediately print something nice label and put some herb there that this is, if you take this, then you will not become old. So people buy that. Everybody will be buying those things because nobody wants to become old. And especially if it is something that has some spiritual aura around it, then they will buy it more. Some Chinese herb, then immediately Dorothy will go and say, I must have it because it will remove my old age. Because it is good, it is, if it is American, then we know all what is here. But if it is from somewhere far away, then we feel that there may be something right there. So something is from India or Korea or some place, then it must be great. As if the people don't die there. Just think, do Chinese and Indians and Koreans, do they not die? They also die. They also become old. And yet, because we want to make money, so wherever there is some weakness, they immediately, that is pounced upon to make money. If you tell them that, yes, if you eat this, it is, you will not become old. And if you consider the price, isn't it worth $20 a month? What does it matter, Otherwise also you spend $20, but if you stay young, you will be able to earn much more. So a person really goes and buys it. It doesn't work at all. It is for some time, it will give some good feeling because you have spent $20. And then you become advertiser of it. Because otherwise people will call you a fool. So you call your friends, this is great. Since I started taking it, this has brought so much effect to me. So thus you will try to sell that to others also. So, but is there really a way to get rid of old age and death? Yes, there is, and very simple. Very simple, inexpensive. You don't have to invest any money. You don't have to take any trouble to go to some Korean pharmacy or some such simple way. What is it? Well, the identification with body. Body has to become old, body has to become dead. Body has to die. Body has to become old. There is no escape from it. But am I body? That is the question. Because of this false identification with body, now I consider I am body. So whatever happens to body, happens to me. Body becomes old and I am body, so I become old. Body dies and I am body, so I die. But the truth is I am not body. And once this truth is realized, then do you have old age now? You are beyond age. You are beyond time. That is the truth, friends. It is, and it is possible to experience it and thus go beyond old age and death. If there is actually an impossibility of going beyond old age and death, then that desire also would be impossible. Desire is only about existing things. Otherwise the very source of desire would not be there. If there is no water, there is no thirst for water either. It is the thirst for water indicates that there is a substance that will be able to quench that thirst. Why do we have this desire to go above old age and death if there is absolutely no way of doing it? Well, not that there is absolutely no way of doing it. You were trying to do it in the wrong, mistaken way. Do it in the right way and you get it. I was trying to open a lock. The key was not going in at all. I tried and tried, it was not, and then that person had given it to me that this is the key for the lock and you will be able to get in. And shivering out in the cold, I was trying to open, I was not able to open. Ultimately, you know, I was so frustrated. Then after a while, he came and I said, "You see, I was already angry that I had to remain out in the cold and no key and what you gave me." I said, "It's not the key." He said, "This is the key. I tried." He said, "Well, you put it like this, open." He opened in a second. I was trying to put it in a wrong place, which was not the right hole for that key. It was on the reverse side. So, therefore, I tried and tried, it didn't open. We are actually doing the same thing, that we are trying to get rid of old age and death. Is it not? Everybody is trying to do that, get rid of old age and death, but trying in a wrong manner. If you try in the right way, you will get it done very quickly. That is what Lord says, that instead of taking refuge in body and in the world, no chance at all of getting rid of old age and death. You may try as much as you want, impossible. You may say that, well, when I die, let there be such a nice grave for me. For whom? You are not there in the grave. You are not in that body anymore. Gone. So, but since we want to continue, don't want to die, our thoughts go to grave. What will happen when I die? People write in the will that my grave should be made like this, this should be inscribed on that. Well, who are you going to read it? if you are going to read it, you are not dead. What does it matter? It doesn't matter. No, the ashes should be immersed in this river or that river or scattered here, there. What does it matter to you? Doesn't matter. But why do we have all? This is a universal thing, friends. Why people want to think after death? Because really, we do not die. It is the body that dies, and because we identify with the body, along with body, we have no choice but to die. But now, attached to God, Mam Ashritya, instead of taking refuge in the world and in the body, take refuge in God, the reality. Base the life on truth instead of basing it on error. If I am trying to open the lock based on error, I could keep on trying it for eternity, it won't open. But base it on the truth. And then what will happen, Triveni? It will open, is it not? Yes, so the life will become successful. Life will meet what it started with, the seeking that it started with, that I want to live for eternity, I want to be young. In fact, that is what made Buddha think, you know, that it is, of course, that could be more as an allegory, but the truth is very clear there. He had not seen the old age and sickness and death, because his father was told that he will become a monk, he will renounce everything if he sees these things. And really, when one sees it like Buddha saw it, earlier also Buddha might have seen it but not seen it. Seeing means not just seeing by eyes. The significance of it has to dawn in the mind. Then it is really seeing. Like when somebody is approaching with a gun and this angry face and wants to kill you, if you see and has you didn't act, then you didn't really see it. When you see means, the significance of that must become clear to you. So on that journey, that became clear to Buddha, that well, old age, so this beautiful body, it will all get wrinkled, all the nice black hair, it will all become grey, it will all, my power in the body will go away, I will become a miserable cripple. Oh well, old age, no escape from it. Buddha was told by his charioteer that, this charioteer told that, well, you also have to become, if you survive long enough, you also will have to become old. And you also will have to die. No escape. And so, Buddha decided to give up this life based on ignorance. He saw that that is the way. The life based on ignorance means perpetuating these very things, and give up the life based on ignorance. Well, then, if you are not body, then old age doesn't affect you. If you are not body, death doesn't affect you. It is as simple as that, friends. It is, just to give you a little more analogy on this, suppose my photograph is torn. Do I die because of that? I do not die. Only the paper gets torn. I am safe, hale and hearty. If suppose a statue of mine is made, life-size statue, and is broken. Do I die? No. I know that I am not that statue. I may feel hurt, maybe, that they are breaking my statue. My is there, you know, so I will feel some hurt. But then this is a statue made of bones, blood, that's all. Instead of the material used is different, but it is basically a statue that I identify with it. Other statues I did not identify to that extent. This one I identified with it. I am this. So when this is broken, when this becomes old, I also become old. I become dead. But know that I am not that body. And then you don't get affected by that. So therefore, taking recourse to what is truth is this solution, very simple solution. As our Swami Ranganathanji used to say, you have to give up. Means what you have to give up? You have to give up your dumbness. Who want to preserve dumbness? Naomi, do you want to hold on to dumbness? Yes, what did you say? No, yes. No. So, nobody wants to be dumb. Nobody wants to hold on to dumbness. That is what is to be given up. So, let us give up this dumbness of perpetuation of the error and hold on to God, the reality. And then it becomes easy. You do not become old. You do not die. So, and thus your knowledge becomes perfected. And that is what is the tate brahma tadvidha krishnam adhyatmam karma chakilam. That they know then what is the truth of this whole universe. What is the truth of the self? Who am I? What is the world? And what should I do? What is the cause and effect relation? All becomes now clear to them. Now the vision becomes clear. Now the confusion and the consequent that getting caught in that duality is gone. You know that this is the right thing to do in life, and thus you get over all those problems of error, basic error in life. And then he, it is in the 30th last verse of this chapter, where he also puts the seed of the next chapter, some technical terms are given here, that sadhi bhutadhi daivam mam sadhi yajnyam cha ye viduhu prayana kale picha mam te vidur yukta chetasah. Those who know me together with what concerns beings, the gods and sacrifices, fix their mind on me and know me even at the time of death. It is sadhibhuta means this world made of elements. That this is also expression of God. They know it as a manifestation of God. Like a wave is a manifestation of the ocean. So they see this world as manifestation of God. Then they also see what are the these powers, the various that consciousness or authorities that govern various functions there. Like this hand is an entity, it is governed by a consciousness that makes it get lifted, makes it hold, make it work. So similarly, everything in the world has an awareness that makes it function, make it alive, so to say. So that is, they also is known by this person. And then, adhi yajna, that is again a very beautiful term, that what should be done by us to realize this truth, that is the sacrifice. That also, the truth of that also gets known. So, and even if you know it just before death, then you have lived the life well. You have achieved the purpose of life. And thus, because that knowledge will cut all the bondage that was the result of ignorance. If bondage is the result of ignorance, then knowledge is the sword that cuts it, that makes us free. So when this knowledge comes, even if it comes at the time of death, then we become free in this life. So that is the last verse of this chapter. The 8th chapter will begin by the question of Arjuna requesting elaboration on these terms. And that is a very beautiful, important chapter. It gives the idea that very beautiful details of time. What is time? Analysis of time. Then what happens when a person dies? And so forth. Many great ideas are there. We will start that chapter from next Friday. This chapter was called Jnana Vijnana Yoga Nama. This is the end of this chapter, and at the end of this every chapter, Bhagavad Gita says that this is an Upanishad. Bhagavad Gita is an Upanishad. Technically, it is not an Upanishad, but because of its importance, its authority, and the knowledge it contains, it gets the status of Upanishad. So, it is an Upanishad which signifies that it is to be learned from a teacher living the life. It is not an academic education. But it is acquiring that wisdom from the teacher functioning in the life. And then it is, therefore, has two aspects. One is the theory, Brahma Vidya, and Yoga Shastra, manifesting it in practice. It is science and technology together. So this is what is emphasized at the end of every chapter, that what we learn in Bhagavad Gita is not only theoretical knowledge, but it has to pulsate in our day-to-day living. It has to become really meaningful in life. It is, otherwise this is not of much use. So, we shall conclude with the closing prayers, unless you have questions. Yes, Charles.
I find that when I try to have resolve, it makes me feel a feeling of tension. And if I give in to something, nothing major, but something minor, I'll feel more relaxed. Now, Swami Vivekananda says that if you have devotion, you don't have to have a struggle to renounce. It'll come automatically. Is the best thing to just feel the tension and just do it anyway?
Well, it happens automatically after you have the resolve. It is, if you resolutely go in the right direction, then all those things which are going to come on that right path will start coming automatically. That is the idea there, that it is, you feel tense because of the momentum. That shows that how much we have to work, you know. So, how much more resolve is wanted in life. Without resolve, any higher achievement becomes impossible, let alone spiritual knowledge. When you give in to say something minor or major, the tension is released only for a very small time. It just bounces back upon you. Otherwise, nobody would have tried to imbibe spiritual virtues. If those releasing that and falling prey to the temptations is going to bring enlightenment, no, we should not be tense, we should be relaxed. Real relaxation is after you hold on to the resolve, then you will see how relaxed you feel about it.
Because I may know intellectually that God is permanent and other things aren't, but it doesn't feel that way.
Well, exactly. You know, that is a common problem. It is for all of us. We know intellectually. He asked that, well, I know intellectually, but it doesn't feel that way. That is why we need practice. If those who are intellectually so strong that what they intellectually know automatically bears on their life, they are very few. But because we have to mold our feelings, therefore, in the light of this understanding, it is always there, like our Laurie's expression, that Swami, it feels nice, okay, here, not here. It all becomes problematic here. Here it is all right. That is where the practice steps in. So as we practice it, gradually the life will change. That very nice book on which we had the retreat, that's for the seekers of God, that Swami Shivananda Mahapurush Maharaj, he had one of his disciples asking this question, that it appears, you know, all these desires, they come in the mind and cause so much of torment. I know that they are unreal and all, but still, why do they come at all if they are unreal? Why do they come at all if they are unreal? And that Swami said, well, you continue this practice with resolve. If you go ahead, you will, after some time, you will ask me the question in the opposite way, that how is it possible for desires to come in life? That will be your question then. And thus, that is what happens. You know, that when you keep on progressing, the mountain appears to be very high. And then you feel that it is, you will never be able to make to the summit. But if you keep on your resolve, then you get there. You get there. One very old monk, when Swami Vivekananda was climbing, he became so tired, exhausted, thought that it is impossible to make it. So he was, but another monk was walking behind him. He was pretty old, and he told this young Swami, Swami Vivekananda, look back. So much of path you have already traversed, that has all come under your feet. Continue, and what you see ahead, that will also come under your feet. Don't get disheartened. Don't give up the resolve. Hold on to it. If you give up the resolve, you are gone. It is, therefore, it is important to hold on. And you will see the life blossoms with that. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मंत्रः तस्य नामानि याने कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।